This episode of GameScoop is sponsored by Squarespace. If you're looking for a way to make your business stand out and succeed online, Squarespace is the all-in-one website platform for you. They take the stress out of creating an awesome website, engaging with your audience, and selling anything from products to content to time, so you're able to focus on, you know, everything else. In other words, you'll have more time for gaming. With the new guided design system, you can choose from curated layouts and styling options to build a unique online presence from the ground up, optimized for every device. And with Squarespace's integrated, optimized SEO tools, you'll show up more often to more people. Squarespace doesn't just make things easier for you. Checkout for your customers is made seamless with simple but powerful payment tools that allow you to accept credit cards, PayPal, and Apple Pay, and in eligible countries, offer the option to buy now and pay later with Afterpay and Clearpay. So whether you're just starting out or looking to expand your existing brand, be sure to visit squarespace.com for a free trial, and when you're ready to launch, go to squarespace.com/gamescoop to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. That's squarespace.com/gamescoop for 10% off. You know, when it comes to wireless carriers, sometimes what you see isn't always what you get. Except with Visible. With Visible, what you see is exactly what you get. If you haven't heard of Visible, well, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. With Visible, there are no hidden fees, no fine print, no hassle, nothing to hide. It's just $25 a month, all taxes and fees included. And you don't need more than one line of wireless to save. You can save on a line all to yourself with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. And again, just $25 a month. The future of wireless is here, and it is transparent. If you want more transparency in your wireless plan, you want to be on the Visible plan. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. That's Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. What's up, everybody? Welcome to IGN GameScoop. I'm your host, Damon Hatfield. Joining me this week is Jonathan Dornbush, news editor. Sam Claiborne is here.
Hey, everybody.
And Philip Musin, our Nintendo editor, is here as well.
Scoop.
Back at you, Philip. We've got a great show for you guys this week. We're going to talk about a rumored new Xbox achievement system, maybe coming soon. We're going to talk about the World Health Organization, believe it or not, they have a new ruling on video game addiction. But first,
this is the most pro-Sonic group we've ever had on this show.
Yeah, 75% of this panel likes Sonic the Hedgehog games.
Guess the 25%.
Yeah.
You like Sonic the Hedgehog games, come on.
I like them. Well, so I like Jonathan. Jonathan's wearing an abstract Sonic the Hedgehog shirt.
It's a really cool shirt.
I like the aesthetics and like some of the music. I don't have much fun playing any Sonic the Hedgehog game, though.
Okay.
Any? Not one, huh?
Nah. Oh.
What about two?
We begin this week with an interesting question that arrived in the Scoop mailbox this week. The Scoop box, as we call it, from a mysterious listener known only as E.M. And it's a question that piqued my interest, and even after doing some research, I was not able to find a definitive answer for.
All right.
The question is, what is the largest dollar amount before something stops being a microtransaction?
Ooh.
Nice.
I think everybody understands what microtransactions are, but it is a good, it is an interesting question. What's the limit?
Do you know about that app called Make Me Rich or I Am Rich?
No.
It was $999, and the guy sold six copies of it.
That's really
for $999 and made about six grand.
Wasn't the whole purpose of that app just to like make you feel rich? It's like, oh yeah, I can afford this app, and it didn't do anything, right?
Well, I don't. I think the app only gave this guy $999.
Oh, that was its main purpose.
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's all.
Well, for him, I mean, it worked out, right?
It worked out exceedingly well. Yeah. I think there's like people out there that just buy every game, or maybe for like posterity's sake, like a library or something.
Sure.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know why six people
bought
it.
I believe
there's
at least six people who do that. Yeah.
And Apple got a cut too, but then they canceled it.
I mean, what's the I'm a little like off the whole mobile playground with like microtransactions and stuff like that, but I feel like the standard for the most part ranges from like 99 cents, which feels pretty micro, right? Like a 99 cents microtransaction versus like $100, like $99 or something like that. That to me doesn't feel micro anymore.
Yeah.
So, but it's been going on since I feel like the beginning of microtransactions, so
Yeah, so horse armor. How much did horse armor cost in Oblivion? Wasn't it like $2.99?
Yeah, I think it was $3 or $4.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it was something like that. But if a piece of DLC costs $10, is that still a microtransaction? If it's $9.99?
Well, so is the piece of DLC you're saying, is it an add-on to the experience?
Yes.
Because to me it's sort of about like the what the content is. Because I've seen like story DLC that ranges from like $3 or $4.
And
like
that, we wouldn't call that a microtransaction.
No, you would just call that a DLC add-on to me. Like if it is a big enough story add-on or gameplay add-on to that extent, that's
or
not
an entire game could be $2.99.
Yes, exactly.
Well,
yeah.
Plenty of mobile games are 99 cents.
That's an iPhone microtransaction
game, right?
Yeah.
The definition for microtransaction describes it as a very small financial transaction conducted online. Very small, but still, this is not very specific.
Yeah, because normally you would say it has to be in-game. It has to be something that doesn't fundamentally change the game. It's usually something frivolous, right?
Like horse armor.
Yeah. Yeah. Although my horse is getting its butt kicked before I got that horse armor.
Yeah.
No.
Not so frivolous for him. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. How does the horse feel about it?
But it sounds like to us, it's more about what the content is than the price.
I think that plays a part of it, but also to me, a microtransaction... Like, I would not spend $80 for a single piece of in-game content.
Well, it doesn't matter. Yeah. Well, I mean, but we're not talking about whether or not you would pay.
No,
that.
Sure. That in my mind is not a microtransaction at that point. That's just I'm buying a thing in the game. Mm-hmm. Like, that is a...
So, if it's a thing in the game, it's a shirt. It costs 99 cents.
Yeah.
That's a microtransaction.
99 cents, yes.
But if it's the same thing, if it costs $80,
now it's
not a microtransaction.
I think then it's a newsworthy microtransaction.
Yeah, I feel that is someone, you could argue, I think on the content side, that is still a microtransaction. It's just an absurdly expensive microtransaction.
I feel like in order for it to qualify as a microtransaction, it needs to at least cost less than the game itself did.
Oh, that's interesting.
Okay. You know, because like for a game to come out and cost $30 but then have microtransactions leading up to like $80 would be insane. Like, that's not clearly micro anymore. So I don't know.
Macrotransaction.
What if there's just one microtransaction?
What do you mean?
Like, if a game only has one thing for sale, is that a microtransaction?
But I mean, you tell me again, like, what if it's $70?
Yeah. Can things be less than 99 cents anywhere anymore?
I don't think so.
I don't think so either. I think it's illegal to make a 49 cent microtransaction. Yeah.
Gum costs at least $5 these days.
What if you put out a knockoff of a game that has a bunch of 99 cent microtransactions, but you made them all 95 cents?
Yeah. Well, I don't know. That might be smart.
Isn't that a good business plan? That might be smart. But maybe it's not allowed.
I feel like Sam's coming away with a business idea more than anything from this show.
I don't know. I see some weird prices on the eShop all the time showing up for random stuff.
Really?
Like, yeah. I mean,
$1.87 and stuff like that?
Yeah, like $1.65 or something
that
for some things. Yeah. So it's very strange. So I wouldn't hold it past them.
I got to look up the rules for that. I'm pretty interested now.
Now
can I sell stuff for 33 cents on iTunes? I don't think so.
I don't look at it that closely. I don't know. I feel like we should do our best to... come up with a standard, because there isn't one right now.
Okay.
And I think we would be providing society a great benefit if we could determine right now what the largest dollar amount is when a microtransaction ceases being micro. I think maybe $7.99. That's the number that sounds good in my mind.
Okay.
$7.99. Is that still micro to you guys?
I think it has to be $4.99 and under.
Okay.
More than $5 doesn't seem frivolous anymore.
I bought Psychonauts for $2.50. Is that a microtransaction?
Wow. Yeah. That's very cheap.
Yeah.
I feel like under $5 makes sense to qualify as a microtransaction.
A cup of coffee
is a microtransaction.
Coffee costs $5?
You get a latte at Blue Bottle,
Oh, yeah.
What?
Oh, yeah. That's pretty standard.
Specialty drinks at Starbucks are like $8.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What coffee are you drinking?
I don't drink coffee.
You drink espresso on the weekend.
Yeah, and that's usually like, what, $1.85?
Where do you get your espresso? I feel like espresso's got to be more than $2.
Really? I don't think so. It depends on how many shots you get.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. One shot is usually under $2.
Wow.
Well, look at what the prices are for a latte.
So that means when you add 2 pints of milk, it's $8.
Yep.
Is that how it works?
Yeah, but it's not 2 pints of milk.
For those big old Starbucks.
Well, maybe for the ventis. Yeah.
Yeah.
Prentice.
Okay. I'm going to move forward. I'm going to consider.
Would you call an espresso a microtransaction?
Yes, in the coffee world,
right. You could definitely rack up some decent microtransactions.
A micro brew
coffee,
transaction.
Right? Because you have your coffee.
Yes.
Or you basically have your whipped cream and your corn syrup and your milk.
Yeah.
And then each microtransaction you add is a shot.
Yeah. Yeah. That's true. And it's under $5.
Yeah.
Okay. Moving forward, I'm going to consider a microtransaction to be under $5.
For something frivolous.
I invite everyone to conform to the standard.
Yeah.
I think it'll clear a lot of things up. Moving on, we've got a story on IGN this week about a rumored new achievement system coming to Xbox. Making some, I don't know if you call them improvements, but some interesting new features to the whole achievement system. So we've got some details here. This is leaked. It's not official yet, but the new system would be called Career. And it would be added to your Xbox, your current, you know, Xbox achievements, adding leveling, quests, and loot for your avatars. And then completing achievements will contribute towards your gamertag level, and leveling up rewards players with loot boxes containing cosmetic items for your avatar. Then Career will also apparently include quests, which rewards players with more XP and loot boxes for doing specific things, such as maybe playing a specific game. And this would be in line with what Xbox platform corporate VP Mike Ibarra said last year when they said Microsoft was looking to fundamentally change how achievements work.
Mm-hmm.
So first of all, how does the Career system sound to you guys?
I like it. So I don't really collect achievements anymore, but I am still a big trophies person on PlayStation, and I like it more than achievements because there is a leveling system to it.
Yeah,
and
it kind of reminded me of the trophies.
Yeah, system. It feels a little more like that, and it's all arbitrary percentage points, and like a bronze, a silver, a gold, and a platinum will get you so much for each level you're at, and it changes as you go up. But I always liked that aspect of it more than just I have a number of 40,000 achievements. It's cool to look at that number, but something about gamifying the achievements made me more interested in that platform.
Yeah.
So I would 100% try this out more.
Yeah. How about you guys?
Yeah, Microsoft has always sort of, in my opinion, led the way of like achievements or trophies. Like they were really the first to sort of take that angle with video games with the release of the 360. And when that came out at first, like when they released achievements, I was a huge achievement hunter. I really tried to like build up my gamer score.
It got us.
It really did. Yeah. It hooked me in. So I just am really excited to see what Microsoft comes up with, like a career sort of mode for gathering achievements or whatever they're calling it. Sounds really interesting to me. And if anything, I think that that'll just be more compelling for people to actually dive in there and build up their gamer scores. And especially if they're going to try to do that, I think it would be smart for them to go down a similar route with what Sony did and sort of add value to gaining achievements. Like maybe you could rack up some gift cards for Xbox Live or something like that, you know, win some free skins or whatever in games or avatar customization options. I think that would be really cool.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. I like this a lot. I think adding more of a, or enhancing the progression system, the metagame of your console, I think.
Do you think they want to push people to play certain releases?
Well, that's what, you know, this, the quests aspect kind of sounds like.
Yeah.
Although, I don't know, it's a little...
Because otherwise you have to make quests for every game, and then there's just achievements.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So it seems like they're going to do, like, maybe tied into the free games of the month.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, go into this game and do this, and you get extra.
Or different genres or publishers, even, depending if they want to do partnerships.
Yeah, and I'm worried about tying it all to the avatars, because I still think the avatars are really generic, and I don't personally like how they look.
Yeah.
And then I also don't care about mine, whereas, like, I felt a little bit more strongly about my me back in the day on the Wii. But I still like, I don't know, I don't like any of those kind of avatar situations, but I do already have like gear and like a portal cube and stuff like that for my avatar. I don't know how much I'd ever care about that again though.
I guess it would just depend on what those cosmetic items are.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I have no idea. Are they cool or are they not cool? If they're cool, I'm interested in them.
And Nintendo made video games for and starring your Mii.
Yeah.
And then I really liked the 3DS Street Pass games when they first came out. I thought those were super cool. And, you know, there was like the RPGs
Microsoft
and stuff. I was wondering if this might imply that there might be some actual games that you kind of...
They were for a while using them.
While.
Some Kinect games, 1 vs. 100, which was so ahead of its time. It's basically, it's basically HQ right
now. Yeah, totally.
It was 1 vs. 100.
Yeah. 1 vs. 100 was awesome.
That game was so much
fun. It was ahead of its
time. But like you were saying with the meta of it all, like I love knowing the stats of how much I've played certain games or what I've done in certain games.
Yeah.
So tying that more into and having that be visible and give me some sort of reward, I'm totally down for that. Yeah. I think that's fascinating.
I think it was either A Kingdom for Keflings or World for Keflings, the sequel, where you could play as your avatar.
Yeah, one of the Keflings.
Yeah.
And you know, Rare designed all of that stuff.
Yes.
They did Avatars. Yeah. They did the Avatars. And I don't know how involved Rare is still with that, but
yeah.
You know,
you don't hear much about them anymore.
If they were unleashed, I'm sure Rare could come up with some cool stuff because they've always made cool stuff.
Yeah.
But I wonder if these quests would they be used for you know, say Dishonored, Death of the Outsider didn't do quite as well as we'd hoped.
Right.
Let's come up with some quests to entice people to play
people
the game.
Yeah, especially if they're discounted already. Maybe people would buy them. I don't know.
Yeah, you would think,
There is definitely a narcissistic, like, darker side of this, of it using it as a marketing tool.
Yeah.
And, like, gamifying people's game habits to get data that you can then apply to new games. Like, if you notice people are attracted to certain quests or certain things in the career mode, maybe you gear your game to be more like that. So people will be more inclined to play it. Like that's the darker aspect of this. But
yeah,
I wonder if this will affect games like that have already been released, or if this is just for like newer games moving forward. Because if it does affect all of the games, then essentially it could, you know, make or allow people to travel back into the backlog and replay games that maybe they've 100%ed, but they haven't completed like these little quests that are now available. So it'd be interesting to see how that works out.
Yeah. Again, this isn't, none of this is official yet, but I don't know. I do like how this is all sounding, and it might get me to spend a little more time on my Xbox. You know, the Xbox, there are lots of great games on Xbox. The problem is that you can play those same games on PC and PS4 most of the time. So there isn't a lot of like, there isn't a lot of reasons why you should, you know, if you're picking a console, why you should pick an Xbox. But having a very unique achievement system like this is a really good reason, I think.
For sure.
A key, could be a key selling point. We actually have an email about this very topic from Dave from Chicago. He emailed us at the email address, gamescoop@IGN.com. And he says, Damon, I finally read the book Console Wars that you have mentioned many times on the podcast, and it was incredible. It's a really good book. Once again, I can't recommend that book enough. During my reading, I got to thinking, Sega collapsed for so many reasons, one of them being that they really only relied on one great console exclusive, Sonic. Of course, there were many great exclusives for the Sega Genesis, but I think in terms of their marketing, you really only saw Sonic the Hedgehog.
Well, and before that, there was a boxing game, and they really doubled down on sports stuff, too.
Yeah, that was in the 16-bit era, that was the
place
to play sports games.
We don't keep playing sports games from that era now, because there's annualized sports games, but that was a big deal on the Genesis.
Yeah, for sure.
And a lot of people switched from Nintendo to Sega for that reason.
Dave says, although I think it is unlikely that Microsoft will ever leave the console market, do you think having so few great console exclusives could really hurt them in the future? And Dave, well, I think it's hurting them. I think it's been hurting them this entire generation. I think it's been a pretty big problem for Microsoft. Would you guys agree?
But don't you think it was their same problem with the 360, but for some reason it wasn't a problem?
No, because the 360 was the most popular console of that
era. But did the exclusives make it that way?
It's like a...
It was Xbox Live,
it's like a self-fulfilling prophecy. It's like...
Well, an exclusive shouldn't be. The third-party game should be the self-fulfilling prophecy. Because as soon as you're popular, then more third parties...
But it all like feeds into each other.
Yeah.
The more popular you are, the more...
Well, doesn't Microsoft
exclusives you get
first-party games? Like, they can still... Nothing's stopping them from doing that.
They just don't have a lot of studios, right?
Yeah, well, and they took a bit of an off year, but I mean, like, especially with the early 360, like, things like the massive success of Halo at that time, which obviously is still a big franchise, but when it was Halo 2 and 3, it was, like, the biggest thing in gaming at that time, and I think that brought a lot of people to
Halo, Ninja Gaiden, Fable, those were, like, the kind of the biggest core exclusives, you think?
In the early days.
And, like...
Gears of War, stuff like that.
Gears of War. 360, absolutely, Gears of War.
Yeah.
And some of those continue to be made, but, yeah, it is a little bit strange that... Those aren't the most popular games on the system now. Third-party games are.
Yeah, you know, for sure.
So.
Mm-hmm. I mean, what's on the horizon in terms of first-party exclusives from Microsoft? There's only Sea of Thieves, Crackdown 3, whatever. You know, Forza is always. You know,
yeah, and then there's the smaller.
Maybe Halo 6 at some point.
I mean, Ori, right? Was always a
kind
of interesting newer
but
game for them.
But the thing is, all these games are also on PC.
Yes.
So that's the thing. That's again goes back to what I was saying. Like, what's the reason you have to have an Xbox?
Right.
You
know? Good for the game developers to have things on multiple platforms, especially in the Steam era. But Yeah, it's tough on the Xbox.
It just seems like Microsoft lately has been favoring their support. I don't know if it's like on purpose, willingly, but they've really been pushing their support more so than ever towards third parties. Like, look at the Xbox One X. It's like a third party machine, you know? Yeah. And that's really what they wanted to promote it as, is like the place to play all of the greatest third party games. So I just feel like that's where Microsoft has all their eggs right now. And it might be because, like, you know, the previous years didn't quite plan out how they wanted to, like with the cancellation of Scalebound. I know that was a big bummer for a lot of people. So
Phantom Dust also, right?
Well, that came out.
That did come out.
But it was just so, like, underwhelming, you know, because it was almost like a direct port of the original game with just, like, up-resed graphics. And it didn't really look that great. And it played just like the original, and I'm a huge Phantom Dust fan, so it made me happy. I would have much rather seen, like, a newer Phantom Dust, but whatever. You know.
One thing Microsoft just doesn't have that Sony and Nintendo have, and this is just because of what the industry is like, is they don't have big Japanese support. And there's crazy, weird Japanese games all the time on Sony systems, and then in Nintendo too. And I don't think Microsoft benefits from that as much.
They almost had Scalebound.
Yeah, for sure. And they had, you know, back in the day, Blue Dragon, stuff like that. But there were always big attempts to do a big exclusive, whereas, like, Ni No Kuni 2 happening on PS4 is like a natural. Like, nobody would ever question that.
Yeah, what were those
early... And Dissidia now is coming for just PS4. Yeah. It's not coming for Xbox. And, and there's just a little bit more Japanese support for these Japanese systems.
What were those early Japanese games for the 360? You mentioned Blue Dragon. Was it 99?
Oh, Blue Dragon, yeah.
Knights? Was that another one, too?
Yeah.
Was
that Capcom?
There was one on, like, three discs, right?
Well,
Capcom did Dragon's Dogma as an Xbox exclusive, too. And then there was Lost Planet. That was an early Capcom game.
Oh, yeah, when Capcom was doing a few of those games.
So, yeah, there was...
Dead Rising at the beginning, and that was exclusive.
Resident Evil 5?
I
bet that was on...
I think
that was
a multi-platform. Yeah.
There were other RPGs that were...
You're right, really
Blue Dragon was the one, though. And it was a big deal because it was like, hey, is this going to sell Xboxes? Remember at the time, it was like 10,000 Xboxes sold in a month. Remember that in Japan?
Yeah.
It was like just nothing.
Well...
Well, and
don't know that it's much better today, but I do remember.
No, but that's a problem.
I remember going to TGS and Xbox having a booth there and like throwing parties.
That's cool.
Yeah,
they did try to make a big push for a while, but I think they've receded back. But you see like the ping pong back and forth of the industry, where like obviously PlayStation was beating Xbox with the PS2 versus the original Xbox. Then 360 dominated. Now PS4 is dominating, and Switch is rising up. Like everything just keeps going back and forth. Who's to say where things are in 5 years?
Yeah,
it's true. And Nintendo's just doing his own thing.
Yeah.
Chilling out over there.
Nintendo's doing great.
Doing just fine.
We got some good numbers for Nintendo this week.
Yeah.
Showing that their sales are better than Wii U already, which is crazy.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I think lifetime sales of the Switch in Japan have already outsold the Wii U. Yeah.
And it was probably their best exclusives year ever.
It is officially the fastest selling console in U.S. history.
Yeah.
Yeah. So good job, Nintendo. Yeah.
Great first year. Remains to be seen what they're going to, what they're going to wow us with in year two.
No kidding.
But I'm anxious.
Can't wait to know.
I will please be excited.
I hope it's not. We don't have to wait till E3. This is a long way
Hopefully
away.
Hopefully not. All right, moving on. This is Kevin. And he says, recently, the World Health Organization officially classified gaming addiction as a disease. I firmly believe anything can be addicting. And if it interferes with your life in a negative way, you should probably avoid it. So I guess my question is, do you guys agree that gaming addiction is a disease? Also, if it is a disease, do game developers have any responsibility in helping those who are addicted? And what can we do as gamers to help those who compulsively play video games? It says, I did a little reading this week, and the International Classification of Diseases will include the condition gaming disorder in its list of diseases, the database of diseases. Whether or not we agree, I think that's irrelevant. Yeah, it's already been decided by people much more qualified.
We can't influence the classification of the WHO.
Than we are. But what about the question is, do game developers have any responsibility in helping those who are addicted? And that I don't know. That I don't know about.
It's like should.
Inflicted disease.
Should like video games start having like a warning on them, like packs of cigarettes do, or something like that? Like may cause like video game addiction or something like that. May cause you to lose friends. And
it's hard because like it's a little bit more passive than other things that you can also be addicted to. Like people don't just get addicted to substances.
Yeah,
you get addicted to a lot of things, and it's just if something's interfering with your life, It's one thing. But you know, that's what you define it as addiction as, right? It's like you are not doing work properly or not going to school because it's interfering. We've all kind of touched that probably with games before. You're like, because they have a quality to them.
Well, yeah.
That makes them addictive almost intentionally. And, you know, where that crosses the line is when they're charging microtransaction money a lot. And potentially, you know, I think that's the only way where maybe there'd be some responsibility on the developer's part.
Yeah.
But that's only when their intention is like 100% like, let's get people addicted and sell them a lot of things.
Yes.
Like that doesn't seem like game development at that point, right? It seems like something else.
The last thing I want to do is like play a game for 30 minutes and then after 30 minutes a message pops up and the game's telling me to take a break. Like you've played enough of this game now. Like I don't feel like developers...
What if you have to pay to do 30 more minutes?
Yeah, I know. Put a dollar
in. A whole different type of microtransaction.
Oh, no. That's a mess. But yeah, I feel like developers, as far as like, you know, preventing things like developing addictions or people gaining addictions from their video games, I don't think that that's the developer's responsibility until it becomes a problem with certain games. Because, I mean, the whole point is to for a game is to hook the player. It's to keep the player playing and engaged.
Especially with certain types of games, like games as service.
Right.
Yeah.
I think that's only a certain classification of type of game, because plenty of games want you to experience a narrative that the artist intended.
Exactly.
They don't want you to play that game forever.
How many people are addicted to Uncharted 4?
Yeah.
Right?
Or Hellblade.
It's not the same sort of thing. Mm-hmm. But I think a lot of online games, games of service, MMOs,
you know, it's,
and
it's
shooters.
Funny though, like those type of games all come from arcades, right? And the
Which
whole idea, what you're kind of talking about, where it's like quick gratification, you know, level, score. And those games, like the history of games that started in arcades, the whole intention is to addict people. Because they want you to play, I think the goal was always about 2 minutes per quarter.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so you have to like the game enough to keep on playing, to put in another quarter, but it also has to kill you fast enough that you have to put in that other quarter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And like the whole arcade industry was kind of built on feeding that type of addiction, which is like, that's the roots of video games. And it's great now that we have whole types of games that are not like that. And you can play Uncharted, you know, and it just has nothing to do with that type of gaming.
Yeah.
But that's what, you know, really, that's when you start feeling that addictive quality of the games.
And I'd be curious to know more about, like, what they classify, like, the gaming disorder and the ways that you are addicted to a game, like, the specific aspects of it that they believe cause the addiction. Like, that is the only point at which you were saying, like, if a developer is causing you to spend money more because that's the inherent thing by tricking you essentially into spending money over and over again, that's like where does it cross gambling lines at that point, which is what a lot of people have been discussing.
I linked those two things, but the WHO doesn't. They just say it's playing something that distracts you from, you know, work or
school,
other obligations.
I mean, is there a Netflix binging addiction then at that point?
For sure.
Probably.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing, right? I mean, like, the addiction can come in so many different forms.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
It's really only defined by whether it interferes with your life.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. I think having it officially recognized is like, I guess, just makes it easier for people to get treatment, right? It's more legitimized. And, you may start seeing more resources.
It freaks out parents more.
Freaks out parents more, yeah, for sure. okay, well, hopefully our listeners and viewers all game responsibly, and none of them are actually addicted. This is Eric in Iowa.
Woot.
Eric says, I always enjoy listening to the show. It makes my commute to and from work breeze by. One of my favorite segments is always your responses to the listener emails. And last week's email about being introduced to video games as a new medium was really interesting to me. Sam, last week we heard from a 16-year-old that had just discovered video games. 16-year-old from China who'd moved to Australia.
Mm-hmm.
And now he's like, video games are awesome.
Yeah, that's really neat.
Where was I? Damn, you made me lose my place. Between that email and it still being close to the new year, it got me thinking about several of my video game firsts. I don't necessarily mean the first game I played, but the first time a game introduced me to a new mechanic. Or refined a mechanic so well it changed the way I judged it in the future. For example, I picked up The Elder Scrolls Oblivion purely because it was $20 and I thought the cover art looked cool. I had never played an open world game before, and I will never forget the feeling I had walking out of the sewer and realizing I could start walking in any direction I wanted. As someone who had only played games like Halo or Call of Duty, realizing a video game didn't need to be structured into a lot of different levels forever changed how I looked at games. So my question is, does the panel have any games that introduced them to a new mechanic or showed them video games could do something they never even thought possible? For me, I'm always, it'll always be Mario 64.
Probably.
Sure.
Like the real, probably the first time I played a 3D video game and moved a character around in a 3D space, mm-hmm. moved the camera around. That was pretty mind blowing to me.
My most recent one was roguelikes. Like when I first played Spelunky and Rogue Legacy, I was shocked that you could rearrange a level to be so compellingly awesome randomly each time.
Dude, I've gotten back into Spelunky lately. I've been doing the daily challenge.
I've heard you talking to Andrew about it. Yeah.
What is the daily challenge?
It's you can only play it once a day.
Yeah.
And it's based on your score. The leaderboards are based on your score. You just see like how
it
far
it gives you equipment.
Well, no, it's just the same. You've played Spelunky.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
So it's just the same. It's Spelunky. Mm-hmm. Everyone has the same level layout, and everyone gets one chance every day.
Oh, I see. So it's it doesn't randomize the level for everybody.
Yeah, it's randomized for everyone.
That's so cool. I love that.
Yeah.
All right.
And so I just play that. Two games I play every single day, Hearthstone and Spelunky.
Nice. That's really cool.
Thanks, you guys.
I'd have to say, for me, I'm gonna reach real deep for this one. But a mechanic that I really enjoyed in a video game is, and I'm not even sure if this really even qualifies for a mechanic, but Dance Dance Revolution, you know, playing on that mat in the arcades for the first time.
Yeah.
That game actually really grabbed me. I was a huge fan. I was that guy at the arcade, like lining up quarters as soon as I was getting off the machine. And I lost.
Did you do a thing where you hold the bar behind you so you can go faster?
No, only losers did that. I didn't need the bar.
You didn't need the bar?
No, I was doing spins. No, I'm just kidding. But I actually lost a significant amount of weight playing that game. I was
really
20
cool.
pounds. Yeah. So,
I was trying to think. That's like a specific time. When did DDR first arrive? It's like late 90s?
I think early 2000s, late 90s. Yeah.
I just feel like there was a time when big arcade machines like that, and like there was like Drum Mania, mm-hmm. Beat Mania, which is like the DJ game. Mm-hmm. There was a guitar one. Yeah. I forget what they're called, but there was like all these like big music arcade games. That was a big thing for a while.
And they're like mall arcades. And then really the home video, you know, music games came home after.
What's the Taiko Drum Master?
Yeah, I love that. Yeah. So cool.
Yeah, Guitar Hero did that for me at home. Was that thing of like, oh wow, this is like, I never really had played rhythm games, and then I got Guitar Hero 2, and I just did not stop playing rhythm games till now. I still play.
Yeah, our Rock Band came out, and just the idea that you could have four people in a room and have so much fun.
Yeah,
basically karaoke.
I was gonna say
it was like, what a cool mechanic that was.
A few like multiplayer benchmarks for me. I don't know if it's a new mechanic, but like Halo 2 defined the way that I started looking at gaming online with friends. Mm-hmm. Rock Band was playing with friends together, mm-hmm. Because it was such a unique experience. And then Journey was playing with strangers, like learning to play a game where I didn't know a person and having to communicate with them despite not actually being able to talk to them, was such a unique way to approach multiplayer for me that I loved. Mm.
I think there have been a few other games that let you insert a photo of yourself into the game, but Rainbow Six Vegas, I think, was the first game that did it really well. And I had a lot of fun playing Rainbow Six Vegas with friends with like crazy faces on our characters.
Just four-player split screen on N64 was a big jump. Mm. Remember that being like, oh, now I can play with just four controllers and play at once.
And then, I mean, speaking of that, I'm pretty sure Perfect Dark was like the first multiplayer shooter I ever played also on 64.
I was thinking some of the wackier side of mechanics that like really were cool is when... I think this is mainly in the PlayStation 2 GameCube era, but I have to think about this. Metal Gear Solid had Psycho Mantis talking about your save files.
Yes.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
That like blew my mind, right? And I only played that, on the GameCube later. That's why I was getting confused there. But also on the GameCube, Eternal Darkness, like it did stuff where it like turned down your volume, and like the actual volume meter that it had like was mine on my television at the time. It was a coincidence. It was really cool, but it also looked at your save files and did all kinds of stuff with that. And I love games breaking the fourth wall. That was like really, really cool new thing when that happened.
Yeah, surely there's old NES games that broke the fourth wall. I can't think of any examples off the top of my head, but
yeah, the save files thing for Psycho Mantis is like the coolest thing ever.
It was awesome.
There's a game that came out. I don't want to spoil what it is, but there's a game that breaks the fourth wall that came out last year that we all kind of fell in love with, and I think that was such an awesome implementation of that.
Yeah,
but I don't want to say what it is.
I know what it is.
Yep,
we've talked about it on this show. And it's time for a scoop, Jim.
A real scoop, Jim.
I've been reading this book, Retro Game Super Translation Selection. It's very entertaining. It's a collection of not, you know, obviously there's a lot of famous examples of bad video game translation. Mm-hmm. All Your Base Are Belong to Us.
Yeah.
And but this book is actually
and that guy's on the cover.
Yeah, mm-hmm. This book is actually more about just interesting translation decisions, and it goes into why they may have been made. So mm-hmm. it's not just like, hey, look at this hilarious.
Is that game called Zero Wing?
I Feel Asleep. The game Zero Wing.
Zero Wing.
I think so.
I Feel Asleep is so confusing because it's the exact opposite of what that guy is doing.
I know. It's so good. The first one in here I thought was super interesting. This is Miracle Warriors, a Sega Master System game. I've never played it. It's an RPG for the Sega Master System from the 80s.
I can safely say nobody here has played that game.
So in the Japanese version, when you go into a shop and you ask to buy something, in the Japanese version, the shopkeeper says, it comes to 2,000 guilders. Is that fine? Right? So it's like, do you agree to this price? Yeah. In the American version, it says, is 2,000 guilders too steep? But so like they flipped the whole meaning of the question, but they didn't change like the input that you would of the yes or no.
Weird.
That's you that understand? Implies bargaining.
Yeah. It's kind of a mind bender.
Yeah, one thing is saying, do you agree to this price? Mm-hmm. And the other one is saying, is this too expensive? But you're both, you know, in the American version, if you said yes, it's too expensive, then you would buy it.
I feel like that probably has to do with like the localization team.
I mean,
You know what I mean?
Back then in the 80s, I guarantee you.
Like they're just trying to appeal more to the American or Western audience.
I think localization team is a strong word for the 80s too. Like they,
if it's being localized in Japan, I'm almost 100% positive. And they make all sorts of mistakes like this. But I thought that was fascinating that in the translation, it ended up you would just play the game wrong. You know, it like prevented you from actually successfully making a transaction at the shop. Miracle Warriors. As I continue to read.
The I Feel Asleep, by the way, is from Metal Gear, the original NES version. And the guy is actually saying, I fell asleep because he's woken back up again.
Yes.
And if you walk past him, you're going to get in trouble. So him saying, I feel asleep means that you think you can sneak past him because he's about to fall asleep. So it's the exact opposite meaning.
Oh, my God.
I wonder if Metal Gear is in here. I was just trying to look.
I feel asleep.
Metal Gear is too mainstream for this book, Sam. Mm.
Okay.
As I read more of Retro Game Super Translation Selection, I'll share some good ones with you.
Yeah.
And that brings us to Video Game 20 Questions. Our suggestion this week comes from Alan in Norfolk, Virginia. Let the questioning begin.
Jonathan.
You want me to begin? All right. Did this game come out before January 1st, 2000?
No.
Okay.
Did this game come out after January 1st, 1990?
Between 90 and 2000, he's asking.
Well, hold on.
You said I asked if it came out before then, so we know it's not before 2000.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No.
Yes. Okay. Sorry. After January 1st, 2010.
Did the game come out after January 1st, 2010?
Mm-hmm.
No.
Okay.
Okay.
So it's between 2000 and 2010.
2010.
All right. Shaky start there. Mitchell, we need your help.
Does the character wear a hat?
What year is it?
No, we're not asking that.
Oh, man, no.
We could ask that if we want. Mm. I'm not actually stopping us from asking it. So is this a console exclusive?
Yes.
Is this on a PlayStation console?
No.
Same question, Nintendo.
Yes.
Okay.
Cool. Nintendo exclusive. That could be in a lot of systems, though. 3DS, DS, DBU.
Should we do handheld or home?
Wii U, GB.
Do you?
Oh, that's a good one.
Oh, okay. Is this a handheld game?
Yes.
Okay.
Handheld. Oh, we're getting
Nintendo
there.
Exclusive.
Sounds like Nintendogs.
should we do GBA or DS then? At that point.
Yeah.
Okay.
Or 3DS, right?
Yeah.
Mm. Is this from a system with two screens?
No.
Okay, GBA.
We did eliminate. That was pretty accurate.
Yeah.
So, a GBA game from the 2000s. That's a little bit later.
Yeah.
It's console exclusive. Is this made by Nintendo?
Are you asking if this
is published by Nintendo?
Yes.
It was published. Right.
So now we know it's not made developed by Nintendo, but it's published by Nintendo.
Do you play as a human being in this game?
I don't think so. I feel pretty confident, but...
So the answer is no?
I don't think you play as
it's
a human being.
Would you call them a human? I mean, I don't want to waste another question, but a humanoid? Can we change it to humanoid? Like something that looks like a human, almost.
I think that's a separate question.
All right, yeah. Never mind. All right.
Okay, so.
But you can ask it. I don't care. So I'm thinking there's like Advance Wars and there's Golden Sun. Is that
Golden Sun,
going down a weird track there. Is this game developed by Nintendo? I just want to get that out.
No.
Okay.
That's
so,
10.
So that's a pretty big hint because it's not going to be like a Mario game or a Wario game or something like that. But it could be Zelda still.
Mm-hmm. Because
the Capcom Zelda.
Yeah. I mean, do we want to just go for Capcom to rule it out? Or
yeah, sure.
Was this game developed by Capcom?
Yes.
Okay.
It does the main character's hat play a big role in this game?
Yes.
But we didn't ask the question.
No, I know. I was avoiding the exact question.
Yeah.
If someone else would like to ask it, even though we know. We could keep going until the 19th question.
I'm just trying to reconcile this with, is Link a human?
Yeah, I mean, because I feel like that is maybe debatable. Some people say Link is an elf or something.
Yeah.
So I guess you could go either
direction. He's a Hylian for sure. Right?
He's a Hylian, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Should we just go for
it? Are you a Hylian in this game?
Yes.
All right.
It's got to be Boktai. Yeah.
Cool. Is this The Legend of Zelda, The Minish Cap?
It is.
Yay.
Congratulations.
Yeah. So the tricky thing is getting to the publishing question. We could have screwed that up badly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. I feel like made by, I just want to clarify, do you mean developed or published?
Well, how weird is it that Capcom just straight up made a Zelda game?
But they made two others.
Yeah. Three Zelda games.
Or the Game Boy Color, right?
Yeah. Right.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they made at least
Oracle of Seasons.
Yeah. And then you've got...
Love those games.
Yeah, great
games.
You've
got, Koei Tecmo making the Hyrule Warriors.
Hyrule Warriors, mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's precedence for that. But he's an elf, right? Humans don't have pointy ears.
No, they call him a Hylian in all the recent games.
But he's not, is he a human with pointy ears?
Yeah, but doesn't everything have pointy ears in that world? So like the basic, I think everybody has pointy ears. Mm. Well, we know he's not a fairy child because in Ocarina of Time, everybody else doesn't grow up, but he does.
That true?
Yeah, because he grows up in this town, he's wearing their garb and everything. But they're like, you're not one of us. No, Pikachu lays that all out.
Yeah, I think you answered it correctly. I don't because I think there's a fine line between human and Hylian. So
I'm sure the listeners and viewers will have some thoughts to share on the matter.
Yes,
look forward to reading your comments. 2005 was when that was released on the GBA, which sounds late, but I guess
it does sound like pretty recent, right? 2005.
I mean, wasn't that the year that the DS was released, or was it
5 or 06? Was it 04?
The DS was already out when this Minish Cap came out? It's hard for me to. Yeah. It's hard to remember.
Nobody knows. The DS had the cartridge slot in it, though, so you could play it.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true.
Backwards compatible.
Yeah. It was also released for the DS, at least for the eShop, and on Wii U. So hopefully you still consider it a console exclusive.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
I think the original release is what counts.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
At the time.
Yeah, you want to talk about the original release window. Otherwise, you can't nail down a year.
That's true. Yeah.
Yeah.
Good suggestion. Alan from Norfolk, Virginia. If you have your own 20 questions, suggestions, send them to gamescoop@ign.com. That is all the scoops we have for you this week. Thank you, Jonathan. Thank you, Sam. Thank you, Philip.
Yep.
Real quick. What's everybody going to play over the weekend? I'm still finishing up the Zelda DLC.
Nice. I finished that. I loved it. I'm playing Stardew Valley like crazy right now. My hands hurt from holding the Switch.
You and Chrissy Teigen.
So nice.
Yeah.
I should hit her up.
Sam and Chrissy. New show. Sam and Chrissy.
I'd watch that. Let's play.
Yeah.
I am playing this brand new Switch game. It's a lot like a little game called Portal, but it's called Chroma Gun. It comes out next week, I believe. So look forward to my thoughts on that very soon.
Is it first person?
First person. Oh, cool. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
I'm still playing through Persona 5. Because I love that game and it will never end, and that's okay with me.
How many levels are
you? I'm up to the fifth palace.
Nice. Yeah. Okay. I'm in two still.
Okay.
And I want to give a shout out. There's a fan made GameScoop fan page on Facebook, and everyone's very nice and fun in there. And they're always talking about what games they're playing and what they're going to be playing over the weekend. So check it out if you want to hang out with some fellow GameScoop listeners over on Facebook.
Easy to find.
I mean, just search GameScoop on Facebook.
All right.
That's all the scoops that we have for you this week. I already thanked everybody. My name is Damon. This is IGN Game Scoop. We're out.
Hey there, this is Justin Bartha. I made a funny new podcast, King of the Egg Cream. It has the greatest cast in the history of podcasts with actors like Louis Black.
I'm torn by my feelings for two women.
Bobby Cannavale.
You can eat it, or if someone hits you, you can put it on your cut.
Melanie Lynskey.
I wonder what these marvelous things are that look just like boiled chicken feet.
Jason Ritter.
I can break things and pick locks and kill people.
Michael Stuhlbarg.
The whole point is to inspire people that they should make themselves better.
Ari Grainer.
No, don't whet its appetite. What are you, an idiot?
Me, Justin Bartha.
That's not just any egg cream, that's a Lemke's special.
And all narrated by the hilarious Richard Kind.
This is the story of Harry Dalowitz. And how he rose from nothing to become New York's King of the Egg Cream.
So if you like funny true stories, come listen to King of the Egg Cream, available wherever you get your podcasts.